magic lies within the trails we ride.
You're listening to the Journey On podcast with Warwick Schiller. Warwick is a horseman, trainer, international clinician, and author who helps empower horse people from all over the world with the skills, knowledge, and mindsets needed to create trusting partnerships with their horses. Warwick offers a free 7-day trial to his comprehensive online video library that includes hundreds of full-length training videos and several home study courses at videos.warwickschiller.com. Just because you
see what is sure. G'day everyone, welcome back to the Journey On podcast. I am your host, Warwick Schiller, and, you know, over the progression of the 3 years of the podcast, some of our subjects have gotten a little further and further out there, and we're going to take another giant leap forward with this podcast. So today, my interview is with Dr. Alison Brown and her husband, Will. So I'm going to read you their bio, and that might give you just a little bit of an idea of what this podcast might be on about, and it may not give you much of an idea at all, but let me read their bio for you. So Dr. Alison Brown is an award-winning author, educator, and quantum healer. In 2014, her search for reconciliation between a newfound spirituality and her traditional Christian upbringing led her on an amazing journey of self-discovery. As a result, Alison's passion is to share those lessons and insights with others who are on their own journey of awakening. As a Reiki master teacher and a quantum healing practitioner, Alison employs a spiritual hypnosis modality called Beyond Quantum Healing. Holding a master's degree in counseling psychology and a doctorate in educational leadership, Alison's use of metaphysical practices within a framework of traditional counseling gives her the unique ability to gently uncover and address her clients' underlying issues. That's fascinating there on its own. The use of metaphysical practices within a framework of traditional counseling. So think about some of my guests who've been, of the quantum healing types, and then some of my guests who have been therapist-y types. So it looks like she combines the two of those together. It goes on to say, in addition to being a syndicated contributor to the Good Men Project online magazine, Alison's work has appeared in numerous publications, including Focus on Fabulous, Natural Awakenings, and Heart and Humanity. She's been twice featured guest on award-winning author Deborah Moffat's Unity Online radio program, Divinely Inspired Living, discussing the inspiration of her first book, The Journey Within, A Christian's Guide to 14 Non-Traditional Spiritual Practices. Alison's second book, Love Notes from the Animal Kingdom, is a heartwarming compilation of conversation with pets and animal collectives. Alison co-authored a third book, The Ancestors Within, Reveal and Heal the Ancient Memories You Carry, an Amazon bestseller. Alison and her husband, Will, both veterans, founded Reiki for Vets, a VA-sponsored volunteer association that operates free Reiki clinics for veterans and their spouses at 7 VA clinics, which is Veterans Affairs Clinics, for you guys who are not in the United States, at 7 Veterans Affairs Clinics in 3 states. Reiki for Vets has been featured in Natural Awakenings magazine, the Boots Off podcast, and most recently on Sister Dr. Jenna's American Meditating Radio program, a syndicated show with over 1 million archive listeners in 90 countries. So there's quite a bit to this. And apart from that, Will is also a trance channel. And as the podcast goes on, you'll find out exactly what that's on about. And that may or may not float your boat, but, this podcast is, we like to have interesting people who tell interesting stories, and these two guests here have one of the most interesting stories that I've heard. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation as much as I did. William and Dr. Alison Brown, welcome to the Journey On podcast.
Hey. Thank you for having us. Yeah, excited
absolutely.
To be here.
Absolutely. It's exciting to be here.
Oh, I'm excited to have you here because you guys are perfect Journey On podcast guests, because some of the things you are on about these days are probably not mainstream, but they're becoming more mainstream, at least to me and the listeners of the podcast. So when we start out individually, tell me exactly what you guys currently do in the world, and then we're going to unravel how all that came about.
Oh, goodness.
What do we currently do? I'm actually a public school counselor by day. in an alternative school for kids in grades 6 through 12. And then in the evenings and weekends is when we do the fun stuff. You want to elaborate on that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I kind of manage the business. So we have a business, palmandlotus.com, and that's our kind of our exploration business as far as into the spiritual and metaphysical side of things. But, you know, we do host a lot of different events for other individuals in the community that just want to have a space to present to the public. So I manage that. So I manage the aspects of finding those individuals and bringing them in and setting them up and, you know, advertising for them and providing all of that for the community. But for myself in particular, my ability is psychic medium and a trance channel. So very similar to Edgar Cayce would be the best example of that. And that's the services that I would provide under my my gift package, I guess you would call it. So.
And I practice spiritual hypnosis in a formality called Beyond Quantum Healing, or BQH, which helps people get in tune with their higher self and their past lives and so forth.
Wowzers. Okay, that's quite the bio. Let's unravel this a little bit as to how you got there. And I know you probably both have different stories, but were you both veterans, aren't you? Were you both in the Coast Guard?
No, I was in the Coast Guard and Allison was in the Army.
Okay, well, let's start with you. You were in the Coast Guard. What did you do in the Coast Guard?
So classically trained as a diesel mechanic. So I went from working on lawnmower engines, you know, the size of a lawnmower engine and small cars, to engines you could actually stand inside the cylinders. So, you know, huge multi-level type of engines. And that suited me for a number of years when I first joined the Coast Guard. And throughout that time, then I got into federal law enforcement. And for the better part of my career until I retired, I was in federal law enforcement, as well as in the upper level command structure of a number of different units. So,
which particular federal law enforcement?
So anything from immigrant migration, you know, across the border, illegal immigrant migration, drug interdiction, fisheries, East Coast fisheries, Gulf Coast fisheries, and then one of the final things, after 9/11, I was recalled for an extended period of time, and I was in charge of about a 40-man maintenance team for small boats that would patrol the rivers throughout here in Charleston, South Carolina, for the ships that were unloading and offloading equipment that were going over to Iraq and Afghanistan.
That's an interesting juxtaposition, because it's almost like, if you want to, I don't know, if you want to put it politically, you had like a right-wing job, and now you have this left-wing mentality. So run it by me again. You're what? Your channel?
Yes. Well, psychic medium and trance channel. And primarily the trance channel is my really the modality that I really hold fast to. The psychic and mediumship aspect of it was just a pathway of getting myself comfortable with doing that work to get to the trance state.
So tell me exactly, can you tell us a bit about what a trance channel does?
I'll actually explain it on two levels. So there's better known as a conscious channel and a trance channel. A conscious channel is one that would be having a conversation as we're having, and the energies shift just a bit, and there's a bit of information that comes in, and the person that's speaking doesn't really necessarily, I'll say, their energy doesn't leave and kind of go somewhere else. They just dip into the information that's currently in the room and bring that through consciously. For myself, think of it as finding an extremely deep meditative state that allows my human framework, my body, and my consciousness to kind of go on pause for the entirety of the experience. So that might be 15 minutes, that might be all the way up to 2 hours or 2.5 hours. And that was all through a hypnosis process, through Dolores Cannon's QHHT, or quantum healing hypnosis practice. And in that, It's like a guided meditation, just like any other guided meditation that some may have experienced before. And in that, I felt myself kind of slide off into this, I'll say, abyss of just energy. And I didn't remember a thing at the end of the session. And the session was about 2 hours. I remembered about the first maybe 45 minutes of it. The rest of it, I did not remember at all until the practitioner, just like in guided meditation, walks you back up, you know, into that space. So
I've recently, on the last few months, I guess, had a couple of podcast guests who are mystic poets. And so they download poetry, and it's almost like Sufi type poetry. So would you call that like a conscious channel? Because if they said they'd be just sitting around, all of a sudden, oh, I've got to write this down. This stuff's coming to me. Yep.
That would be a conscious channel, or even to the extent that, I don't know, you had a dream, or you're awakened in the middle of the night with just a presence of knowing something, and it's so, you know, it's right there in front of you. You've got to start writing it down. You're going to be in that energetic state. So that would be a conscious action of a channel. Yep.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of artists are channels. They channel the music. The words come to them. The songs come to them. The poetry, writers, inspirational writing.
Have you ever read Big Magic by Elizabeth?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes. I was going to mention her. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the earlier podcasts I did was called Books That Have Influenced Me. And that was one of the many books I talked about, but I just love that the Big Magic, that magic that's out there that you can tap into if you align yourself the right way. So Will, the trance thing, is it a little bit like, say, like a shamanic practice where they'll chant, drum? I'm not saying you're chanting or drumming, but it's kind of the same sort of a thing. Okay.
Yeah, I would say that it would be along those same lines. So, because a lot of shamans, when they are practicing their craft, you know, they're going to reach out to other dimensions, other realms, other, you know, metaphysical spaces, and they're having to, in essence, leave their physical body and their consciousness off to the side while they go and explore another area. And that's exactly what I do whether it's conversing with your higher self or conversing with a pet or, you know, some other aspect, for sure.
And so where did all this start for you? Like, where did you go from engine mechanic, catching the bad guys, to having this connected consciousness type thing?
Yeah. And, you know, if you would have asked me this question maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, I would have had a completely different answer, because I know now a much deeper array of information that was given to me as a child. So I've always had kind of an intuitive aspect of myself, but I also had this aspect of knowing that there's a greater whole or a greater something that was guiding my life. But in high school, we had a psychology teacher that would have us meditate before class. And in that, I've had some very interesting out-of-body experiences. But at that young age, I didn't have anybody to go to because I didn't know what was going on. I was going to ask him. And so I just kind of kept it to myself, but I locked it away in a way that I knew I could use this in moments where I felt a bit stressed or whatever. So yes, I used it in my first 4 or so years of being in the military. In those stressful moments, I could find myself into a kind of a meditative state that I would take away the stress, and I could be a bit more active or a bit more proactive of what I was doing. Life happens. Everything goes on fast forward. You have kids, you just do life. Then in 2015, Allison was starting to explore this thing called Reiki, right? And
the gateway drug.
Hey, thank you. Yes, absolutely. That's what we tell all of our students. It's the gateway drug to all things metaphysical. And so I was already being seen by the VA, the Veterans Administration, here in the States, and they had me on a myriad of different medications for my lower back. And I was, you know, I was up for anything. I like being a guinea pig of trying different things. And so Allison started practicing Reiki on me, and it started to bring back this feeling I had as a child, this kind of this sense, this presence. And it was able to, you know, over time, get myself off those medications. But in that experience of Reiki, that's where the psychic and the mediumship aspects started coming into play very strong. So that all came to the surface. And so I was able to explore that. I have a good mentor here in Charleston, and she's put on a few classes. So I've taken a few classes in mediumship, and that really brought that up for me to really explore and play with and understand that aspect of it. And then it was around, 2018. The spring of 2018, where a mutual friend of ours on Facebook posted, "Hey, I'm getting certified in quantum healing hypnosis. I need some volunteers." So I signed myself up, didn't know what it was. And I would say, as they say, the rest is history. I had to provide a list of questions, and she went into it asking those questions. And it was extremely profound for her as well as myself. And after we finished that first session, because it was so profound, because I did drop in so deep, she wanted to come back for subsequent sessions, just to practice with that and understanding of that. So I think we did, maybe 5 or 6 sessions. And increasingly longer, and as well as more in depth, and reaching out to different aspects of myself, and not only that, but other things. And then it intrigued Allison enough to get trained in Beyond Quantum Healing, and then use that. So then, so you can kind of put a frame around it. Spring of 2018, I get introduced to QHHT. That's where I learned to be the gift of trance came through. By late 2018, right before 2019, the energetic team that I'm connected to trained me how to self-induce. So I didn't need the process that Allison or the other practitioner used to induce me into that trance-like state. I could sit in a chair through a couple breaths. I could drop into that trance-like state, and that's the practice that I do now. So there's a lot there.
Well, you know what? This is one of those things, like, each of you is, 2 or 3 episodes of a podcast episodes, and I've got 2 of you all at once. So I've got to kind of and quite a few of the things that you guys do. I've had a lot of other guests who, have those abilities and senses. And so I kind of want to, if I can, try to not double up too much, because, like I said, if we're going to do a whole story, we could be here for 3 days, which I'd be quite happy to do. So Dr. Allison Brown, what are you a doctor in, by the way?
In educational leadership. I've worked in the school district for over 25 years, and at one time aspired to be a principal or a superintendent, but not any longer. My life has taken quite a different turn, a lot more fun.
Tell me about the turn. What was the turn into the spiritual, metaphysical kind of a world, if you weren't already there?
It was very gradual, because I was raised in the Christian church, kind of afraid of all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. When we were in Texas, stationed down in Texas, I heard from God, a claircognizant moment, that I was supposed to start a healing team in my church. We were at a Methodist church at that time. And just doing the normal thing, raising our kids. So I went to the pastor and I said, "Hey, I'm supposed to start this healing team." He goes, "I know. I knew that you were coming." I said, "Oh, well, I guess we got the same message." So I did that. And all I knew was, A, God still talks to people. And B, I have a role in healing somehow. And so when we were transferred up here to Charleston, I kind of started to fall away from the church. Took many, many years. And was exploring other things. I explored Reiki. I wanted to see how that aligned with what I already knew about healing and the Holy Spirit coming through and working through my hands. I found that it was quite similar. The only difference really is the verbiage, which is what I'm understanding now, separates the greater understanding of spirituality and other religions. It's really just a matter of terminology and verbiage, but most of the concepts are the same. And so once I started practicing Reiki and working with Will, I knew that was our calling. I just knew it. And then sort of one thing led into another with his gifts. And so that's kind of where we've landed.
Tell me about this hearing from God. So you grew up in the church, so you're religious. But God hadn't spoken to you before, had he?
No.
No. Okay. And when you got this message, was it a knowing, or did you hear it?
I didn't hear it audibly. It was just this knowing, this idea, like Elizabeth Gilbert talks about. This idea is floating around and it pops into your head and you don't know where it came from because it didn't make sense. I had never done healing work. I was comfortable with people laying hands on each other in the church. They did that in our church. But I was not in any position to start a team. I wasn't that kind of leadership type. I was an educator, a counselor. But I wasn't one to necessarily stand up in front of the church and say, hey, I heard from God. I'm supposed to start this team. Who wants to join me? But people resonated with that. And we created this team and we went around to hospitals and worked on people. But it was just a knowing, those ideas that you just know and you don't know why you know.
So I'm fascinated by this, what could you say, this transition from growing up in the church to, being fully immersed in the spiritual and metaphysical world, which, I grew up Catholic. And for me, there was nothing spiritual or metaphysical about growing up Catholic. It was like we were culturally Catholic, meaning, you went to Mass every Sunday and, you celebrate Christmas and Easter. But as far as it being any other part of your life, it was, we could have been going to a basketball game every Sunday morning. You know what I mean? But you weren't basketball players the rest of the week. Like, you didn't go out and shoot hoops every night. Like, it wasn't like it was a part of the thing. And one of the books that you have written is fascinating me, and it's called The Journey Within, A Christian's Guide to 14 Non-Traditional Spiritual Practices. That's one of the books you've written. There's another one I really want to get to in a minute here, but let's talk about this one. Can you tell me a bit about this book and how it came about? Because I find that people involved in organized religion, and in my experience, it's the Christian faith, it's either one or the other. Like, that stuff over there is off limits. And, I was recently at just last weekend, I was at a horse event. And on the Sunday morning, they had a, what they call it, cowboy church, And I've never really been to cowboy church, but I thought, I'm at the point now where, I'm going to go along because I know who I'm connecting with. This guy might have a different name for it, but I feel like we're all connecting to the same divine consciousness sort of thing. So I can just insert my names in there where he puts names in there and I'll be good. And 5 minutes into this thing, he starts talking about, pressures from the outside world and things we're exposed to. And then he got very down on Harry Potter and was saying that Harry Potter was witchcraft. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure you and I would get along real good here, but, so he had that. There's Christianity, which is I have the only God, and everybody else is wrong. All 3,000 or however many religions there are on earth, they're all wrong. And then non-traditional spiritual practices, that would be burning at the stake type stuff. So I'm fascinated by this book, how you came about to write it and what you, some of the things you put across in it.
Well, it's quite interesting because, the Catholics believe in all of this stuff because they do exorcisms. Obviously, they believe there's something there to exorcise, correct? They also believe in speaking to angels and dead spirits and all of that sort of thing. So they believe in it. They just don't want you to do it. They want the experts in the church to do it, right? They don't want you to have a direct line of communication with God because you might realize, hey, I don't need the intermediary anymore. And so luckily for me in my church, I wasn't afraid of any of this. My mom was quite charismatic, and so I grew up understanding speaking in tongues, which is very much what channeling is. It's energy coming in from the Holy Spirit or wherever it's coming from, being sort of processed through the human body and comes out the voice. A lot of times when you're speaking in tongues, it's obviously not in English. It sounds gibberish, and there are translators. But with Will, most of the time it comes out in English. So in other words, I wasn't afraid of that sort of thing. And I think now, looking back, that it was all purposeful, that the point of me going through this whole iteration of being immersed in the Christian church, being one of those that thought I knew best, you know, that was going to save everybody, that wanted to tell people what to do, it was all purposeful. Because now, and this was the point of the book, I can help people to bridge that, the understanding from religion, whether it's Christianity or what have you, into a greater understanding of spirituality in general. And it isn't about throwing away everything that you know, or calling it bad, or being upset. It's about expanding your box to understand that all of these beings, these angels, Jesus, Mother Mary, whoever it is that you were comforted in the church, you know, being comforted by in the church, you can communicate with, and they can help you directly by using some of the tools that I write about in the book. So all of the 14 practices that I write about are things that I was scared of, that I thought I was going straight to hell if I practiced. Things like mediumship, meditation, acupuncture, simple things like yoga, all of that stuff I was afraid of. My mother was like, absolutely not. So, you know, I talk about why I was afraid of it in each of those chapters, why perhaps you should be courageous enough to look into it. And, you know, not everything is going to resonate with everyone. So if there's a practice here that strengthens your relationship with your God, wonderful. If one doesn't resonate, you don't like tarot cards or whatever, you don't have to do it. But be courageous enough. That was really the message that I wanted to impart on readers, was to be courageous enough. Stop worrying about what your pastor thinks, or your friends, or your parents, or your neighbor think. Live your life. Listen to your intuition and go from there. So that was really the impetus for writing that book. And I hope that it's, well, I know that it has helped. I've heard, you know, some good feedback. So,
for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like you are sharing that from a place of, well, I saw a Brené Brown quote yesterday where she said, I'm not the leader or something. I'm just a journeyer who's sharing what I'm doing. It sounds like you're not coming from a place of Almighty telling you how to do this stuff. It's like, this has been my experience. And that's kind of what this podcast is all about, is people, you know, sharing their journey. And so that part there, that one's relatively easy for people to wrap their heads around. I mean, that's like first and black belt. But you have another book that you have written that I want to talk about, and it's called The Origin Story, Rediscovering Our Galactic Ancestors. And it goes on your website here. It says, the true origin of humanity has been hidden. It is time now for that knowledge to be revealed through in-depth conversations with our galactic ancestors. Author Alison Brown takes us on a deep dive into the most ambitious multidimensional project ever attempted, the creation of the human race. In fascinating detail, the 12 source clusters, we're going to have to talk about that, unravel the mysteries of our DNA, the galactic wars, disclosure, ascension, and more. So before we get into that, I have talked on the podcast before about a book I've read called The Cosmic Serpent. You ever read The Cosmic Serpent?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
It has something to do with our intergalactic ancestors. But so this is
– okay.
This subject here is probably a bit of a stretch for some people, but let's hear all about it anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
I think you're in the right place.
I was just going to say, this might be, you know, strap in, because this might be a little expansive for some.
We might start with the animal book, but that's okay. We're going to dive in. the origin –
The thing is, you know, I'm a horse guy, and a lot of my listeners are horse people. A lot of them, probably half of them aren't too, because this podcast has taken on that direction. But yeah, we've all heard animal stories before. I'm interested in this stuff. Like, you want to find, there's plenty of podcasts you can hear animal stories on. I want to hear this stuff, because this podcast is, it's really
It's about me being curious about stuff and other people get to listen. It's not like I need to have a podcast for the masses. Like the podcast was for me. I'm very selfish about that. I want to hear the cool stuff.
Awesome.
I love it. I love it. Absolutely.
So the origin story was just published in June, and that was another one of those inspirational messages that popped in. And I explained that at the beginning of the book about how this idea came about. So it was my third book. And after writing the second book, I was bumbling around for a couple of years trying to figure out what I wanted to write, because as all writers know, you're not happy unless you're writing. And so I kept coming back to this idea of extraterrestrials. I've always been fascinated by, you know, Atlantis and Loch Ness Monster as a kid and the Bermuda Triangle and all of that. So I kept coming around to galactics because we talked to them frequently through the channeling. One thing led to another. We ended up talking to higher selves and animals and all of that, but also a lot of extraterrestrials and off-planet energies and beings. But I didn't know what that would look like. I didn't know if I had a guide that wanted to help me with the book or what it was supposed to look like. And one day I happened to read an article about our 12 starseed clusters. And I've heard the word starseed bantered around. We all know, most of us know that a starseed is a person who's here on the planet that understands they've come from outside of the planet to help humanity evolve at this time. Mm-hmm. That's generally the definition of a starseed.
I'm glad you defined that because I was thinking, well, I don't know what a starseed is. I mean, I've heard the term bandied around, but I've never heard it actually.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. So it's okay. Okay.
Yeah. And so I read this article because I didn't know that there were only 12 of them, because there are billions of races of extraterrestrials, but 12 starseeds. And this article laid them out. And I thought, I came home and I was just talking to Will about, hey, you know, I saw this article that said there were 12 of them and describe them and which one do you think you are? And anyway, he started getting lit up. So whenever we have conversations, when we know we're on the right track, he starts vibrating, he gets lit up. So we thought there's a there. Mm-hmm. So let's go channel. Let's go ask, is there a group, a council of 12 that we can talk to? So we came upstairs here to the treehouse and just experimented like we like to do. And I said, hey, is there a council of 12 that wants to talk to us? Sure enough, there was. So they popped in and they said, we are the pure energy of the 12 starseed clusters that founded your galaxy. We have basically what they call an ethereal message that is broadcast throughout time, throughout history, of your origin, humanity's origin, and you picked up on it. You are the scribe for this time period. So I was introduced to a guide that was going to help me with the book. His name is Thaddeus. He's a Lyran, one of the starseeds. Mm-hmm. And he was the one that directly helped me energetically connect with each of the 12 so that each of the 12 could bring forth their understanding of the story and their role in humanity's inception and this galaxy's inception. So it sort of went from there, and we did multiple hours of channeling each of these groups, putting it all together into a book so that humanity understands where we came from.
You know, if you guys at home, I can actually see Will and Allison, and they just look like the loveliest couple you might see in the grocery store. But
right, but
the average lovely couple you might see in the grocery store don't have conversations like that.
No, no. And it's such an interesting, I'll put this over everything that we do. Tomorrow we're celebrating 33 years of marriage tomorrow. So
congratulations.
Thank you. And in that, you know, from the earliest portions of our relationship, I mean, even before we were married, Allison asked me, you know, where do you see us in 10 years? You know, that question over dinner, right? Where do you see this relationship in 10 years? I said, well, we're in the future. I said, well, we're going to be working together. And she's like, not with this guy. I'm too much of a perfectionist, you know, according to Allison. I also said, well, I see you writing books and, I'm going to be sitting at home signing those books and sticking them in the mail and, fast forward. But in everything that we've done since 2015, since that moment that Allison had the call to take Reiki level one and then level two and then work her way through and then practice on me, it has revealed a whole nother side of this relationship that was just under the surface. And that's, you know, at that point, we were already married, what?
About 26 years.
26 years. So 23, 26 years, 24 years. You know, not to say that anything that took place before that wasn't exciting, but this now moving forward is just, it rejuvenated the relationship on so many levels. And it's such a blessing to be able to, you know, have a partner that we both are engaged with. And then you're right, you know, having conversations with galactic beings on a regular, you know, it might seem strange, but I'll tell you what, the information that comes through is amazing. And for me, though I don't hear it when it comes through, I know what it feels like. So I know the energy and the loving energy and the loving experience I get to have while I'm immersed in it, bringing those messages through. That's the amazing aspect of it.
But I want to add two things to what you said, Warwick, and that is ordinary people can do extraordinary things if you allow yourself to follow your own truth and your own path, and you don't live your life based on what other people think you should be doing. If you can trust and be courageous enough to step out and follow your own internal guidance, you have no idea how beautiful life can be. And the second thing is, because we are pretty normal, I mean, I'm a school counselor. I have a doctoral degree. He was a retired Coast Guard guy. It isn't like we wear white linen and do yoga and, you know, breathe air and don't eat.
Right. I don't sit in the Zen position, you know, 90% right. of my day.
So the point is, and this is really our mission, is that if people can look at us and go, hey, you know, they're pretty normal, so maybe there's something to this. Maybe I should explore some of these concepts for myself. They're not crazy. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that is a part of the plan. I mean, I kind of have a little bit of a similar journey, like as far as, you know, I was a horse trainer for many years, and then I started making YouTube videos about horse training. And then I did that for quite a long time. And then I started to get a bit more into the spiritual and metaphysical. And I was quite open about that in my, you know, videos, like, because there's a huge part of that in interacting with horses and animals in general. And I was, you know, pretty upfront about that. Well, by this point in time, people have watched enough videos for years to know this guy's kind of normal.
Right.
And so maybe what he's saying might be something I could have a look at. It's not like I was the white, you know, white linen sitting in right. lotus position, breathing air for 30 years sort of thing. And I think that is, I think the universe has a grand plan, and I think it's very smart the way it goes about it sometimes like this. There are people out there who are the linen wearing lotus types, and they, yeah. I think they attract people who are ready to go straight there. And I think some other people need to be like led along slowly, yeah. which is nothing wrong with that.
They need to have somebody to help them step out from behind the corporate, you know, facade or the, you know, whatever it might be doing. And when they can see somebody that, when I left the military, I worked in the corporate startup world, the corporate tech startup world. I mean, you know, I went from working on diesel engines to working on technology. So, and in that, you know, all that came about. And yeah, so now if I can bridge that between, you know, some of these people that I know in the tech world or in the, you know, in the corporate world, well, you know, I'm here. I can have that conversation. I can have this conversation with you in a place at which you know what you're listening to, meaning I can talk the talk of your language, but I also can intersperse it with my language.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just thinking, if you ever run out of jobs to do, you've got a radio voice. Like you could be a DJ, radio DJ to get a great voice.
Thank you.
You were just talking about tech and, you know, bringing some of these ideas to tech. You know, we're not very far from Silicon Valley, and half of Silicon Valley goes to Burning Man every year. So there, you know, I think tech is quite on the way as far as metaphysical stuff. But something you were, Alison, a minute ago, you were saying something about kind of like removing the layers or whatever. And I have some of this stuff that you guys are on about, I've experienced a little bit on plant medicine journeys. And the, and it wasn't like I was looking for that. For me, it was about, you know, it was about healing trauma and stuff like that. And that's what led to that. But I have been some of those places that are more real than this place. And once you get a sense of, oh, this is this 3D reality that we're in right now, is there's not much to it compared to what else is there. Have you guys done a lot of, like for me and a number of people, you know, it's the inner work, trying to work on the inner work that sheds the veils that allows you to see this stuff differently. Have you guys done a lot of that, or have you kind of got to this point without necessarily going that path to it?
Well, that's interesting. We have our own tiny little podcast simply because we enjoy talking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And in that
shameless plug, what's it called?
Out on a Limb podcast.
Yep.
Simple enough. Yep.
So one of the things that we like to talk about are the dark nights of the soul, is, you know, the healing journey that a lot of people go through to end up in that metaphysical space when they're desperate, they're on their knees, they have no other options. The church isn't working, therapy isn't working. And so they explore things that they would not have normally entertained. We did not, and we joke about it all the time. It's like, we didn't really have a dark night of the soul. And we kind of, we're like, sorry, we just haven't. It's been very gradual.
But I will say, you know, I struggled with it because I'm like, you know, everybody else has had this dark night of the soul thing. And that's kind of how they got there. I didn't do that. And so then I'm like, am I legitimate if I didn't have a dark night of the soul? Does my stuff hold weight if I didn't do a dark night of the soul? But, you know, and our partner in crime that does the podcast with us, Samantha, she says, you know, oh, well, you know, Will just kind of skipped ahead of the line. He just went from here to there, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm like, that was my plan, I guess. That's what I crafted for my contract. But, you know, that doesn't mean I might not have one in the future. I might and take my experiences to a whole nother level. But, you know, I have not had that type of experience. But I have done other, we'll say, different journeys to experience a very deep side of my consciousness, for sure.
And everybody has to go through healing, whether you have this an extreme dark night of the soul or whether you do gradual healing journeys. You have to do that. You mm-hmm. have to do the work. You can't get from A to B without doing the work, right? Because there's so much involved in terms of the ego and the habits and the behaviors and belief systems that need to be broken down and reevaluated and looked at. You also have to dredge up the not so good stuff, because we're all dark and light. This is a polarized earth, dark and light. And so if we don't acknowledge and accept and integrate the dark pieces of ourselves, we never can really experience the fullness of the light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most certainly. Will, you just said something a minute ago I wanted to touch on for our listeners, because before we got on this podcast, I talking to Will and Allison, I said, do you know anything about my podcast? They said, I would listen to one. And I said, you know, it's a lot about sharing, people sharing their journeys, especially people like, say, you two, who, you know, you didn't grow up the children of hippie parents, or, you know what I mean? You had somewhat a normal sort of life, and you've somehow shifted into this spiritual metaphysical world. And a minute ago, Will, you said you had some self-doubt, like, well, I haven't had the dark night of the soul. Right. You know, am I legitimate? And a lot of people, whether it's in that context or any context, will have that self-doubt to where, oh, I'm not, you know, it's that whole imposter syndrome thing. Who do I think I am? And the point I'm trying to make here is everybody has it.
Yeah. Yeah. And what comes out of that is your authentic self. You know, that was early on in my channeling, you know, because of the space that I'm in, I don't remember anything that takes place. So it's like, we get done with a session and I'd say, Allison, so how was that session? What happened? You know, can you give me the cliff notes? You know, that kind of thing, because I wanted to make sure something wasn't said that was, you know, bad or whatever. But what I, what I came to after that, after going through that iteration of kind of having that self-doubt, was really one afternoon, and it was around, I think, mid or late 2019. I was sitting on the back porch, and it struck me. I said, this is who I am. I can't deny the fact of what I do. I can't deny it to myself, and I can't deny it to anybody else, because this is truly who I am. And when that took place, there was a shift in my confidence of what I do. And we can strip away the metaphysical. Whatever job you're in, if you feel that there's doubt in what you're doing in the job that you're currently in, have a moment of reflection and just assess where you're at. Are you living your authentic self in that job? Are you truly living, you know, who you are in that environment? And if you are, then own it, because that's going to give you the confidence to excel in whatever you're doing. Doesn't matter what it is, it's going to give you the confidence to excel. So.
Yeah, it's interesting about that, though. You know, you think, Alison, you were talking about a minute ago about healing journeys and stuff. And if you think, you know, is this my authentic self? I think, at least for me, you know, I spent 50 years thinking I was somebody because that was my cultural conditioning. And then things started to unravel a bit. And then I was still underneath it all. I still don't know who I'm going to be when I'm shed all the layers, because we're still doing that. But I think a lot of this stuff has to do with unraveling your cultural conditioning. And mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of people don't even know who they are is not who they are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I was exactly. that way for, I'm talking from experience, because for a long time I thought I was a particular person, and I don't think that's, you know, who I was led to believe I was is not who I actually am. And so but I do think in that unraveling of that stuff is when you get to this, the into the realms that you guys are exploring, because that's blocked out by all the cultural conditioning. And you know, I've got a huge interest in Indigenous healing practices, Indigenous spiritual practices, and all, you know, Indigenous people had senses that we don't appear to have these days. And it's not we don't have them, it's just they're culturally conditioned out of us. And I really think that anybody that's going through, you know, like they have the dark night of the soul or going through their healing journey, you're going to end up heading in the direction you guys are heading in. I mean, you guys are a long way down that rabbit hole, but it's heads in that direction, don't you think?
Yeah.
And that's exactly why the book is called The Journey Within, because we have to go inside and figure out who we are. And most of us are either too afraid or we've never done it, because it's like an onion. You have all of these layers of what other people think you are. You have labels. I'm a teacher. I'm a mother. I'm an equestrian. I'm a whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's labels that are external to you. And so we have to go within, figure out who we are, and then go from there. But like you said, yes, it's cultural beliefs, it's parental beliefs, it's religious beliefs, it's all of these ideas that have been put upon us since childhood to define us. And so we have to learn how to define ourselves. And sometimes it takes our whole lives. You're on your deathbed and you're still discovering interesting and unique things about yourself and about the world that we live in. And so it is so much about being brave enough to face that, because you're going to find some things that you don't like about yourself too. And those are the things that cause defense mechanisms and that you hide and that you're embarrassed by, and they cause shame. But when you can truly see that shadow self, understand who you are, there's nothing to be afraid of anymore because you own it.
I was at a horse expo probably 6 months ago, maybe, and I was talking to somebody, and I just met her there, and she's a therapist, and we're talking about different things. And we were standing very close to each other, looking each other in the eye, and just holding each other's gaze while we're talking. And I said to her, you know what? I didn't used to be able to do this, And I'm not sure. I think there's one of two reasons I can now do it. I couldn't do this because you're letting people in when you're doing that. And the one of two things has happened. The stuff that I used to be afraid of people seeing, I've healed that and it's not there. Mm. Or I'm no longer afraid of people seeing what is there.
Exactly. You know
what I mean? I'm not sure which one of those it is, but I mean, it. Like, I could just hold her gaze and like it was totally natural. But I was just at that moment, I was thinking, I told her, I said, I couldn't do this before. And I'm not sure which one of those two things it is. And she said, well, it's quite possibly, you know, both. a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, but in the unraveling of that stuff is where I think you start to go down the rabbit holes that, that you guys are going down. And, you know, I'd say a lot of people have not started working on that stuff yet. So what you guys are talking about is quite far removed from their reality.
Well, and you can. There are channelers out there. YouTube is filled with them. There are spiritual teachers and gurus out there. And you can tell the ones that are not healed, that haven't done the work. So you can explore these things and try to teach others. But until you do the work, your authentic self isn't going to be revealed. And people can see through that. And more, because of where we are evolving to, those untruths and those things we try to hide are going to surface, mm-hmm. just like a pimple, ugly metaphor. But that's what's happening on Earth right now. All the ugliness is coming to the surface to be revealed, exercised, and healed. And so, yeah, I mean, you can explore this, but you're not going to achieve the levels that you really want to or need to, perhaps, if you don't do the work.
Yep.
So, lost my, was your free Zoom channeling.
Yep. Yep.
What, how does that work? Like, do I show up and I go, I want you to, I don't know. Do I want you to channel? I don't even know who you would channel. I
mean, right. Where do you start? what we offer for that is, you know, if you sign up, you can submit one question via email. We have a link in the sign up page. And you submit an email to Allison of a question you might want to ask of the collective, which is, for me, it's Archangel Michael, Archangel Raphael, Source, and Enoch. But it doesn't necessarily have to be of the collective. It can be something that you wanted to know from your higher self, or something from a galactic, or something, you know, something other than that. And you submit that question to Allison. You jump on the Zoom call and you're present in the Zoom call, and then Allison facilitates all of the questions. So, for my channeling, all my channelings, Allison is the facilitator. I call her my, you know, my comfort net. She holds the space, builds a container. I can fully surrender into that experience. I don't have to worry about a thing. And Allison handles everything from there, from the point at which she, you know, begins the questioning to the point at which she calls me back out from the channeling exercise. So the monthly channelings are exactly that. It's about an hour and a half. I drop into my trance and all of the questions that were submitted for that month get answered.
Can you give me an example of a question someone might ask? Like an average question, if there is such a thing in this sure. world, an average question. Like, what do people want to know?
Sometimes they want to know about their guides. So they'll ask, somebody might ask about Sekhmet or something happening in the Middle East was one of the first questions last month. What's going on over there? Somebody asked about their cat and how can they help to heal their cat? Any number of,
we just got back this past weekend from a 4-day conference that we were at, that we actually presented three group channelings to three different groups. And each one of them, or the first one, they were able to submit a question. I think one of them was something about Lemuria, and wanted to know something about Lemuria.
And somebody asked about their relationship with their spouse.
Yep.
Someone's child has autoimmune disorder, and she's having a hard time figuring it out. Was there any advice?
Yep.
All kinds of stuff.
So if you can think of the question that you can't get the answer yourself, you can reach out into the
the etheric, you know, and it'll come through.
Okay, so in my researching of you guys, I was on YouTube and I saw a YouTube video. And so I had a podcast guest from Sweden a while ago named Emily Kaysdotter. And Emily is a you could loosely call her an animal communicator. She's way more than that. But she will communicate with the collective consciousness of, say, horses or whatever, or she will actually inhabit the consciousness of a horse. And that, with her, it happened. She had a very rough life and as a young girl, and she had this pony she used to go and ride at this riding stable, and it was not treated very well. And one day she was there with the horse, with this pony, and all of a sudden she, you know, it wasn't like she got messages from the horse. She actually shared the consciousness of this horse. She was the horse and could feel what the horse could feel. And so she does that with all sorts of things. But anyway, in researching you guys, I saw a YouTube video. Will, you were talking about communicating with the collective consciousness of bees. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Did I get that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
What have they got to share with us?
Well, Allison can share that. It was just that was through our good friend Candace Call Goldman, who is the founder of BQH, Beyond Quantum Healing, and forgot exactly how that came up. That was because of the wasps and the bees, was it not?
This was during the time we were doing a whole lot of pet channelings.
That's right.
And similar to the way we call in a higher self, we also call it the pet's consciousness, and it speaks through Will's voice. The animal will speak through the voice. And so around that same time, I was feeling like exploring veganism. And I think it had a lot to do with connecting with the consciousness of animals and feeling this need to move away from eating meat. But a lot of vegans, they don't eat honey either. They don't eat any animal products at all. Don't wear leather and all of that. But to me, I really felt like honey was a healing food and that it was a gift from the bees. And I thought, well, let's see if we can talk to the bees and ask them that. So we were already calling in individual animals, and that was the very first collective that we called in. So we called in a collective of bees. Indeed, they said that they create this honey for humanity. And as long as we leave enough for them to continue their hive, they're fine with us harvesting that in a humane way. And they said, you have no idea how important the honey is to your body. It's like a drop of sunshine and all of the power of the sun in every drop of honey. And so from there, we started calling in other collectives. We called in the Wasp Collective. And for the purposes of that book, Love Notes from the Animal Kingdom, which were a compilation of these channelings, I wanted to talk to a lot of animals that are typically hated, rebuked. They induce fear. So wasps were one of them. And I talked to the wasps, and that was the first one that made me cry. It literally made me cry because I thought to myself, I've hated wasps. I've killed wasps. I've railed against the wasps. And they could see me. In that moment, they saw my soul. I was talking to their consciousness. And so it just reduced me to tears to know that I can't lie to them. They can see who I am. And they know what I'm capable of as a human being. We had a fabulous conversation, and they explained, you know, if you have to dispatch of a hive or a wasp, to do so consciously, to do so early. And they explained, you know, how we can get along. And so we've also talked to snake collectives because, again, they're so important for humanity and people are so afraid of them and they don't understand the importance. Same thing with spiders. Same thing with rats. Mm-hmm. We did talk to some fun ones in the book as well, though, like dolphins and elephants and fireflies and some fun things, too. But I thought it was super important to talk to these animals that get a bad rap and they really need some love. Mm-hmm. So that's how that kind of came about.
What did the snakes have to say?
Well, first of all, they really help you keep the rodent population down in your yard. So practically speaking, they're super important. And they really mind their own business. They don't want an interaction with you. So if you just let them go, they're okay. But they're super helpful and they are harbingers of change. So if snake comes by your path, pay attention. and know that change is on the horizon.
But similar to your guest that you were talking about that embodied, you know, the pony, that's kind of where the whole pet and animal channeling came from. We had a pet cat, or, you know, household cat that we have, that was having some severe behavioral issues. And just to the point at which Allison was so frustrated with that cat that she was ready to take the cat to the vet and have it put down. I mean, it was already, you know, 12, 13 years old. It was an older cat, but not old enough to put down at that point. But the behavioral issues were such an issue that Allison was just at her wit's end. Well, while we're up here, as we like to do, we like to just channel and play and different things like that in the energy. Allison thought, well, while Will's in, I wonder if I can channel that, the consciousness of that cat, since it can channel my higher self or some other consciousness. What about the cat? So called for the cat. I embodied that consciousness. And from there, had this beautiful conversation with the cat, explaining what was taking place, what was happening in the house, what was taking place with the relationship between Allison and the cat and everything else energetically. And it really realigned the relationship. And now, mind you, the space that we're sitting in, our, the, what you see here that we're sitting in, is about 50 feet from the house. From the time we finished that channeling to the point at which we walked over to the house, the entire demeanor to that cat changed. And that cat has shifted its relationship with Allison in a way that it is so affectionate. It is so loving. It's just, it's absolutely amazing. So we moved forward, and, you know, there was another group of friends that had 5 rescue dogs. And that's the very first time that we tried it, you know, in a bigger session setting like that. And from there, it just progressed into one of our modalities. And it's just such a blessing. There's something interesting when I drop into the consciousness of an animal or a collective of animals. If you've ever felt that space of, I'll say, real unconditional love, and the space of gratitude that is just so overwhelming, it just takes and sets you back, right? That's what it's like every time I drop into the consciousness of an animal. It's just absolutely amazing, because they're divine. They're open to the creator always. So it's like tapping into just a fragment of that. That's so wide open, and it's amazing.
Have you, a minute ago, Allison, you said that he's, you know, done some fun things like dolphins and elephants. I've got 2 questions. Have you ever seen the Netflix series show My Octopus Teacher?
Yes.
And have you ever tapped into the consciousness of an octopus? Because I actually think they're aliens. I think they are way more neurologically advanced than us. And I think they're not from this planet, but that's just me.
I think so. I've heard that before. They are highly intelligent and they are odd. They do seem alien. Mm-hmm. But then again, from what we understand, a lot of the sea life that's on our planet has been, it came from other planets. So the Orions, for example, hybridized a number of beings as they were experimenting on what kind of life would survive on Earth. And so a lot of the water animals originated in the Orion constellation and were brought here. So it's very possible that the octopus were. In fact, everything that's on Earth came ultimately from outside of Earth. So,
but did we ever reach out to the octopus?
We have not talked directly, but that's a good question. Maybe next month.
We'll put that.
They are something else. It's interesting you mentioned snakes before, Allison, and then your book about our, you know, galactic ancestors. I mentioned a book called The Cosmic Serpent before, and it was written by a guy who was an anthropologist who went to the Amazon to study the local people. And at some point in time, he did some ayahuasca ceremonies down there. He didn't go down there to do ayahuasca, but he found that a lot of them were doing it. And so he did some ayahuasca ceremonies. And then for years, he researched things about things he saw in his ayahuasca journey. And there's snakes. There's always snakes when you take an ayahuasca journey, and a lot of times they're intertwined, and a lot of times there's ladders. He was trying to figure out this thing for years. And something else that was interesting was in all mythology, a lot of ancient mythology, origin mythology, there are snakes, even in places where there are no snakes, like in the very far north of Siberia. Some of their creation myths have to do with snakes, but there's no snakes in Siberia. So these people would have never seen a snake before, but are still aware of snakes. Anyway, long story short, he comes down to the idea that shamans, so you think about snakes intertwined in ladders, shamans actually decoded DNA way, 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 way a long time ago. And that's one of the things he got out of it. And the other thing about, you know, the cosmic serpent is they all these basically come down to his idea is that life on Earth came here, some sort of reptilian thing from somewhere else. So it sounds like, yeah, sounds quite similar sort of a story.
Definitely. Yeah. The two strands of DNA do look like snakes forming a ladder. You're right.
Yeah, that's really in essence, you know, you talk about the the reptilians and, you know, the cosmic, you know, aspect of that. And, you know, from the origin story book that we put out, and that's the fascinating thing is to listen to how, you know, kind of where humanity has come from, because really all of this, everything that we're intertwined in, our existence, this planet, all of it, our cosmos, is for us. It's for humanity. It's to experience this life or these lives that we live. And it's by design of intertwining different pieces of all of the different, source points. You asked earlier about source point or source cluster. It's intertwining all of those energies that gives us our DNA. So we do all have a part of that galactic ancestry in us. Now, you know, belief systems start to come into play because we're human. We're going to do that throughout time, whether that's a religious belief system or some other belief system. It's just a framework to be able to conceptualize the unseen. So whether that's a religious belief or some sort of shamanic practice or whatever it might be, it's all tapping into the same thing. It's just giving our mind something to play with and something to visualize where we've come from or what to believe.
Right. And because it came from the galaxy, there are the archetypes that are consistent, like you mentioned, Warwick, amongst all cultures. So you wonder why are these things so consistent, all of the archetypes? And that's because it comes from beyond the earthly construct. It's coming from outside of the system. And so we're all tapping into that. And every culture is interpreting that in a similar way.
Yeah. And I think too, it's, you know, I think we just talked about this past week, but this aspect of disclosure, everybody thinks disclosure is going to be this thing where, you know, a big ship's going to just appear in the sky and all of a sudden, you know, here's our galactic family. My belief, I think this is shared amongst our group that we have here in Charleston, disclosure is going to be really the revealing of where we've come from and who we are, the real essence of who we are, not covered over by our belief systems and all of that. It's the purity of who we are and why we're actually here. I think that's going to be the greater disclosure and how we're going to have, communal aspects with many other beings that right now vibrationally we can't see because they're all around us. I mean, shamans, they dip into them and they, you know, embody them and they bring them forward and they use them, you know, psychics, mediums, we tap into the unseen, my channeling work, I tap into the unseen. So it's just a shifting of a framework, but it's bringing it into the visible framework.
Yeah, well, there's so much we can't, you know, you think about how much of the light spectrum we can actually see. We can't detect most of it, really. Talking about I get so many questions about your channeling. You said before that Allison kind of holds space for you while you're in there so you feel safe. Have you ever felt unsafe going there? Has it ever felt a bit like an ego death, like, oh, my God, I'm going to lose this world?
No. I've had some, I'll say, strange happenings while I'm in. So I'll give you a bit of a, hopefully I'll be able to paint a picture so you better understand where I'm at when I channel. So when I first started channeling, and it was being through the being induced, I would tell people that, you know, when they would ask, well, what's it like when you're out? Well, I told them, I said, it's like I'm standing on one side of the window, looking at myself on the other side of the window, and looking through that person that's on the other side of the window and watching their lips move, but not hearing anything. So I'm kind of displaced from it. So I kind of observe myself actually in the process, but I don't hear anything. I don't really see anything in the environment. I just get a glimpse of that. Well, that's progressed to the point at which now I feel the energy transition in and out of my body as it takes place. But one of the, and we were just telling this story this past weekend, I have a deep connection to the Zetas, which are the little green, big-eyed, long-armed, thin-fingered kind of aliens that you see in the movies. They're called Zetas from Zeta Reticuli.
You're saying the movie's got it right?
To a certain extent.
Pretty much what they look like.
Yeah, pretty much.
The big head, the big eyes, the little body, long arms.
And the reason I say that is because in one of my first channeling sessions while I was being induced by that practitioner, she said that when that energy came in, because I had some specific questions about that feeling, because I've always had a feeling since a kid of having some sort of alien connection. I was afraid of aliens. I'd see a movie, I couldn't sleep for the rest of the night. Well, as I'm laying on the table, she said, my body literally under the covers looked as if it started elongating under the covers and taking on this form. And my voice changed and the verbiage was coming out differently. Well, move forward to the point at which I'm inducing myself, and Allison's enjoying connecting with the Zetas because they kind of have a dry sense of humor kind of aspect. And so Allison likes to probe and, you know, get some information. There was a point not too long ago, maybe a year or so ago or 2 years ago, that she called the Zeta forward, my Zeta. And I say my Zeta because it's come to find out I have a parallel life as a Zeta. And it was as if I'm looking through the face of that Zeta. I mean, literally, I saw my face morph in front of me into that little lips, small nose, big eyes, big head. And it was very uncomfortable because I'm consciously seeing this in that state of non-being conscious. So it was a very weird space that I was in. Allison finishes the session. I come back out the other side and I immediately look at her. I said, you called the Zeta, didn't you? I said, don't do that again until I figure this out. And it was really just what I've come to find. And it's, he wanted to embody through me because he wanted to have that experience of being able to interact with the people that were sitting in front of me versus just energetically. He wanted to be present. He wanted to look and be present in my energy just so he could see out there, which is fine. I understand that now and I'm comfortable with that. And if he does it again, that's fine too. But, And I look at him as my technical advisor. I've always had a very innate ability to solve problems mechanically without any prior knowledge to something, no formal training on it. I use all my senses, all senses that I have, not to diagnose, but just to get in touch with that piece of machinery or that engine or whatever I'm working on. But then I go to bed. It might take a night or two, but I go to bed and I am, it's kind of, I call it like my matrix effect. It's like I get jacked in, a blueprint gets dropped in, and I know exactly what to do, what to fix, and where the repair is, and it's up and running the next day. So it's a very interesting place, and you know, I always felt like, oh, everybody can do this. Everybody has that ability. Well, apparently not.
So sometimes if he's struggling, like the ceiling fan breaks, I'm like, hey, Zeta, can you come help him before he starts cursing? Because we need some help here.
Yeah. So it's a good relationship. I love it. It's again, it might expand somebody's head a little bit, but I love it. I love every aspect of it.
Wowzers. Has there ever been a time when you're channeling that you, like, it scares the hell out of you? Like, it sounded like when you morphed into that Zeta thing, it was a little, mm-hmm. little disconcerting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that goes to the aspect of, you know, if I think about something, is it being fearful? Well, then it's going to start to build a framework that I'm going to immerse myself in. That's going to start, I'll say, coloring whatever I might be doing. So I try to eliminate fear out of anything that I do in this realm, in this space. Now, do I have fear in my normal life at times? Yes. I mean, we're human, we're going to have fear. But when I enter into, I'll say, this space, this container that we're sitting in right now, this was specifically built to be a space in which I can walk in and have absolutely no fear, no matter the client that sits in front of me. And we've had clients that have had some very interesting, you know, you could say dark energy, attachments, you know, experiences like that. I can't discount that because that's the reality. But when I drop into that space, I know that I'm supported by Alice, and I know that I'm supported by the room that I'm sitting in. And I know the intention is to get to their higher self. Their higher self isn't going to have any of that connected to them. But what we can do when we're connected to the higher self is then work through those lower vibrational forces that are around them that are affecting them negatively and be able to address them appropriately and then either transmute them, open up spaces for them to be taken up by Archangel Michael or whoever needs to help with that, and help them relieve themselves of that, of those experiences.
So. But it's really about trust. And so mm-hmm. because you have a team, yes. Archangel Michael and Raphael and Source and Enoch, that is your primary team. And they're the gatekeepers.
Yeah.
They are not going to let anything happen.
Right.
We know that this is his contract to come in and do this. And so if any harm was going to come to his physical or energetic body, that it wouldn't serve humanity. So right. we know that he trusts his team and they're protecting him at all times.
And I will say, you know, early on when I first started doing this channel, there were a lot of people that, you know, that I knew in our circle that said, you have to be careful. I used to channel and then my body just began to shut down. Or I know channelers that, you know, they just let their body, you know, deteriorate away. And I'm like, well, okay, well, that's their reality. That's not my reality. When I go into this channeling, I can't tell you what I feel like on the other side. When I come out the other side of that channeling, I feel vibrant. I feel just extremely exhilarated. It's just an amazing thing. I mean, my team has told me, as soon as I drop into that trance-like state, it's like a pause button is pushed. At that point, I'm not aging. I'm not experiencing this world. My body is just sitting there. It moves. It does its thing.
They call it stasis.
Stasis, yeah. But I'm
not,
so
it's not homeostasis. So it's just stasis.
Stasis. Yeah. Pretty soon he's going to be way younger than I am.
Not too much.
So you let me get this straight. So you are not aware of anything you are saying. So mm-hmm. Allison has to. Do you ever record it or
everything that we've been doing since 2018, whether session clients or personal channelings, has all been recorded. It's all been archived. Okay. Allison does a masterful job of taking one question and unweaving it into a half a dozen more questions. So like a client will come and, well, I'm not sure what to ask, but here are my questions. And they're good questions. But Allison knows that as soon as, because though she doesn't get into the trance state, she does get into the flow, right? She gets into that energy space. And so she's connected in a way that, you know, is a bit more on the surface, but she'll ask that question of the client. It'll come through their higher self, through me. And she'll know intuitively, okay, we got to dig into this a little further. There's more here because there's more information that really this is the essence of your question. What you provided was just the beginning of it. So,
Wow. I'm just, my mind is buzzing of all the possibilities. You know, what I might do before we get too much further here is you guys chose some questions that I sent you. I might dig into those right now, if that's all right.
Sure.
And some we may have already covered. I doubt it. But a lot of times by the time we get to the questions, we've already kind of covered the mm-hmm. subject. So the first question that you guys chose was, if you could spread a message, one that people would listen to, what would that message be?
For me, it's about living your life, mm-hmm. forgetting what other people think and having the courage to live your life.
Yeah. And I'll agree with that, but I'll add a little bit more. It's to understand your, I use the word humanness. It's to understand that aspect of yourself that you're unfamiliar with. Understanding how at times you might be uncomfortable. Why are you uncomfortable? And learning from it. So it's becoming intuitive with what your body's actually beginning to tell you. And that's the essence of living your life and just really being in touch and in tune. It takes a while to get there. Don't freak out if you can't get it right away, but start listening to your body. Start listening to your humanness. Yeah.
Great advice. Alison, what you said was interesting. You said that because here you are right here on this podcast embodying that you do you. Don't worry about what everybody else thinks.
Right.
So that's what I was going to ask you before. Do you guys know who Dr. Joe Dispenza is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
So, you know, in the start of one of Dr. Joe's books, he said, I no longer try to defend myself to critics. And I imagine with the things that you guys are sharing, you've had your probably had your share of critics. And if you have, how have you navigated that space? Sorry.
So what's interesting, and this is important for listeners to understand, what you worry about and the critics that you think you're going to have really don't materialize. You're going to have some, of course. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to love you, sorry. But it's never as bad as you think it is. So, you know, when we even started Reiki, we took it into the VA, and I thought we were going to get some pushback. We really didn't get much pushback mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. But in terms of when we do, it takes a while. I mean, you don't just step out of the gate and not worry about what people think. And so even now I find myself sometimes feeling like I have to defend myself. And then in fact, it just happened this weekend. And I said, but it doesn't take long anymore. I figure it out quicker. And I said, you know what? I don't have to defend anything. This is just my belief and they can have their belief too. Mm-hmm. And so when you feel like you're having to defend your belief, you have to dig deeper and figure out why. Why do you have a dog in the fight? What do you care what they believe, right? So agreeing to disagree is my favorite term.
Yeah, and for myself, you know, I'll be very transparent about this. I don't listen to anybody else's channelings. I don't get on YouTube and listen to all the multitudes of channelers that are out there. I don't read anything from anybody else. So, and that's purposeful so that I remain completely clear. I'm not filtered by anything from somebody else, but I also don't listen to any of my own stuff. But then, you know, how this all comes around. So we've done some interviews earlier this year on another podcaster, and I was all excited. I want to get in there and start looking at the comments. I want to start looking and seeing what everybody's got to say, all the positive stuff. And well, there are a few negative ones, and I was like, I should have taken. So I do listen to Joe Rogan's podcast, and when he
Joe Rogan says, don't read the comments.
Don't read, and I heard him in my head as I'm looking at those comments. Don't look at those comments. Don't look at those comments. Don't read those comments. I went and read them, and I said, "Damn it! I knew I shouldn't have done that." But that was a lesson for me because, you know, I have to, you know, as much as I say, you know, I'm living my authentic self. I'm living my own truth. I still have a human side. And when that hits you, it's like, ugh. So then I defer to Alice. I'm like, look, read the comments. Only tell me the good ones. I don't want to know about the bad ones. So, but yeah, it's an interesting journey. And when it comes to, you know, those types of experiences but you grow from it, you understand that you can't please everybody. You know, and you have to release from the outcomes. That's what we teach all of our Reiki students. You know, and so I have to learn that lesson myself. I have to understand that for myself. When I have a client and the client gets done and they don't have this joyous smile on their face or, oh, that was a great session and that's it. And then they walk out the door. I'm like, nope, that's it. I sent them on their journey and that's it. I have to release from it because I can't control all the outcomes. So, yeah.
Right. Don't you think, though, that Joe Rogan's advice, don't read the comments, is not only good advice as far as the comments, but, you know, so a number of years ago I went to a men's emotional resilience retreat, and one of the book that we followed that weekend, it was called King, Warrior, Lover, Magician. It talks about mm-hmm. these four archetypes, and all of these archetypes have a job, but they also have a shadow side. And so the king does things for the good of the people, but the shadow side of the king is mm-hmm. the prince, and the prince does things for external validation. Mm. And so, you know, don't read the comments. It's about, yeah, don't read the comments, because not everybody's going to like you. But if you really think about, like, on a different level, if you do something knowing you're not going to read the comments, then you're probably doing it for king energy. Because if you're going to read the comments, you could be in prince energy when you do it. You could be, I'm going to do this, you know. And every once in a while I'll have, like, I'll make a video and I'm like, you know, I'll work with a horse and I'll make a video or whatever. I'm like, oh, this is the shit. Like, people are going to just love this. And I'm like, yeah, but what are they going to – why do I want them to love it? Do I want them to love it because this message is important for them to hear, or do I want them to love it so I get the love back sort of thing? You know what I mean? And right. I think Joe Rogan is right with the don't read the comments on one level, but I think there's a deeper level. If you set out to do something with the idea that you are not going to read the comments, I think then you're doing it for the right reasons. Whereas if the comments are available to you, there's a part of you like, yeah, I'm doing this because people are going to like it, you know. But I've read the comments for years, and I have to say I have learned a lot from my detractors.
Yeah,
because. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's a bit of a litmus test, you know, you stick it out there to the public as to whether are you on the right path or not. And these days, I mean, I do read quite a few comments, but these days I don't have near as many detractors as I used to. But I think the path I'm on now was partially steered because of my detractors. Enough people said the same thing. It kind of made me think, and it didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't really sound like sour grapes detractors. They sounded like wise people detractors. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that too many wise people are detractors in the social media space. Because if you're doing that a lot, you're probably not very wise. But I think there's a lot to don't read the comments.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're exactly right. And if you could read them and be objective, be in that space of neutrality, then absolutely you can learn from them.
Yes.
But you're right. If you're going to write a book, if you're going to do a podcast, you want to do it for you. Mm-hmm. That's the joy. That's the inspiration that comes through when you're doing it because you love it. Yeah. And that's what Joe says. He does the podcast for him. And that's what you said at the beginning too, Warwick, is I do the podcast for me because it's fun and I get to talk to fun people and have a good time.
Right.
And that's the energy that you want to shine through whatever project you're working on.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's where the magic comes from. Like Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic, you tap into this collective and you get stuff come through you if you can show up with the right outlook on it, if you're doing it for the right reasons. And I think, you know, I think that collective consciousness is very good at seeing through your bullshit, and you might be telling yourself you're doing it for the right reasons, but somewhere deep down there, you're really doing it for the wrong reason. And I think that's when it doesn't work. And so it's such an I think it's just such an intangible thing that that doing things with the right I don't know if the energy is the word I'm looking at, but yeah, let's go with that. Like doing things with the right energy, with the right outlook on things. It's just that's helping people with their horses. A lot of times I have to really drum that into them that you can do exactly the same physical thing but with a different intention behind it. I talked about that girl from Sweden that inhabits the consciousness of animals. And she said a phrase that really made me think. And it was the difference between giving versus trading. Like like in dealing with an animal, say a horse, you know, mm-hmm. are you giving or are you trading? You're like, I'm going to do this so that you do this. Or are you just giving, like, I'm doing this because it's for the good of you? And I think that's where the magic lies. I think that's where the cool stuff happens. And I think, you know, divine consciousness really knows the difference between your intentions behind the whole thing. And yeah, I think the magic happens in those cool places.
Yeah, it's called being authentic.
Yeah.
That's the word, being authentic. And the universe knows. You can't fool the universe, and you can't fool a horse either, by the way.
Most sentient beings are not easily fooled. Let's get to another question.
Sure.
What have you changed in the past 5 years that helped shape who you have become?
For me, it's been trust. It's trusting myself. A pivotal point took place I would say probably around 2019, about mid 2019, shortly after we started doing the animal channelings. And we were doing them very consistently. Word spread and people wanted to get an animal channeling, and we were racked and stacked with animal channelings. And to me, it felt almost like I was kind of put on autopilot. And it just felt like, you know, at a particular point, there's a little uncomfortableness because I wasn't sure, am I really doing this right? Well, then I don't know. I came up here I've always done a little meditation before any session that I do, whatever it is, just to get myself in the right headspace. But I sat down and I have a little mantra that I say now. And a lot of it is about trusting. It's trusting who I am. It's trusting that I am doing what I'm doing, and I'm trusting in this process. And it's not that I think this in my head. I speak it aloud. And when I first did that, I felt a shift take place in the confidence that I had and knowing that, yep, I'm on the right track. So now it's part of my daily exercise when I do it right before I set the intention for a channeling, and it's about trust. And it really has strengthened the aspect of what I'm doing for myself, for sure.
How about yourself?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I don't give a crap about what people think of me anymore. I mean, I spent 50 years almost of my life worrying what everybody thought of me. And frankly, what people think of me is none of my business. So that's definitely been solidified over the past 5 years, is just doing what I feel is right. Mm-hmm. And it makes the world of difference.
There's a freedom to that, isn't there?
Yes, it's liberating. Mm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody struggles with it. And yeah, I think when you can get to that point, it's quite the liberating space to inhabit.
And I think a lot of it comes with age. You know, you hear your parents or something say, hey, I'm 79, I don't give a damn what anybody thinks anymore, right? But hopefully people can figure it out sooner, because it just brings joy and freedom and a different trajectory if you can learn that early.
But I do think it's you, how am I trying to put this? You can do it, like you said, like the 79-year-old parent. I don't give a damn what anybody thinks. I don't think that's not it. Like that, you know, that there's a negativity to like, screw them all. They're all idiots anyway. Right. It's not that. It's understanding everybody's on their own journey, and it's viewing their view with some empathy and some respect while holding your own view. You know, it's because it's very easy to go from I care about what everybody thinks about to screw them all, they're all dickheads.
Point taken, right?
The same thing in the other direction, isn't it?
Right.
It's not that space in the middle where I'm quite comfortable with who I am, and I don't care what you think of me, but I'm not going to I'm not going to do things just to annoy you.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's that middle ground in there.
Right. Thank you for that point of clarification. There is a different energy behind both of those. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's very easy for people to think, yeah, I want to get to where I don't care what people think and I'm going to cut people off in traffic. And you know what I mean?
It's not that energy.
No.
It's definitely not that energy. No.
Yeah. No. It's the same thing. Like, I don't care what people think, but there's a different energy behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you look at the world today and it's so polarized. I mean, there's one side or the other, and you have to be on one side or the other. You can't be in the middle. But when you have this aspect of, okay, well, yeah, I know who I am and you don't have to like it, but I'm going to find you in the middle when you're ready to talk. That's really what we need to come back to. We can have our opinions. We can have our, you know, the way we see the world, but you have to be willing to come to the middle and hold that space and discuss it. And you don't have to like me for my opinions, but let's have a conversation. Let's not scream at each other from across the street. I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's where we are.
And I'm assuming an underlying foundation of love and compassion anyway, in all of the things that I talk about. I didn't make that clear, but yeah, when I say that, I'm coming from this place of love and compassion for self and others.
Yeah.
And when you love yourself and you have a strong sense of self-worth, then you really don't worry about what other people are doing or what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, most certainly. A second ago, Will, you said, you know, everything's polarized these days. You got to be one way or the other. And I was going to say, unless, of course, you're a diesel mechanic who channels the consciousness of bees.
Right. Yeah, you know, life is a weird journey and it takes you to some weird places at times. So,
Speaking of weird, the next question is debunk one common myth about your profession. But I have to have a caveat on this, every person on the podcast, because no one on the podcast has a regular profession. It's not like I'm a plumber or I'm a lawyer. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to answer this question, please debunk one common myth about your profession. First, you have to tell us what exactly is your profession that you're referring to.
So for me, it's about working in the metaphysical. Anything that you're doing in the metaphysical, whether you're a psychic medium, whether you're a channel, whether you read tarot, whatever that is, the big myth is that it doesn't harmonize with religious teaching and that it's incompatible and that you can't do it or that you're a bad person or you're going to hell. I think that is such a myth that does a disservice to people and it scares them off from learning about things that could really enrich their life. Mm-hmm. And it really is compatible. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, it's about terminology. We call it Christian contemplation or we call it meditation. We call it speaking in tongues. We call it channeling. It's all the same concept. Holy Spirit energy, Reiki energy. So if you can be brave enough to explore it, you'll understand that we're all speaking the same language, just using different words.
And I'll expound on that a little bit, but not in that same framework. So what I've come to understand and how I see all of this in this space. Okay. Yes. I can put a label on, I do psychic work. I can put a label on that. I do channeling work. I can put a label on that. I do Reiki and I can put a label on that. I do mediumship, but does that serve me? And I want to say that, you know, many of the people that we know that are moving into this space of metaphysical work and metaphysical activities, they're finding difficulty in what do they call themselves? Because 15, 20, 30 years ago, you could only do one thing. You could only be a tarot card reader or an astrologer or a medium or whatever. And so it was easy enough to say, that's what I do and that's who I am and that's what it is. We're moving so much faster. As you alluded to earlier, the veil is thinning. So more is becoming aware. So in debunking, I want to say, don't put a box around yourself. Don't put a box around what you're doing. Don't struggle with trying to find out what you're trying to call yourself. Do what you do. if that's creating a new modality, if that's working and blending multiple modalities into one, so be it. The world needs your gifts, not boxed in, not labeled so that you can only do that one thing. Expand yourself, do the things you love, and allow yourself to enjoy every minute of it. So.
Round of applause for Will Brown right there.
Good answer, honey.
Thanks. There might have been a little conscious channel in there.
Ooh, that was very good. What quality do you guys admire in a person?
I think we've said that a couple of times. Yeah. It's the authenticity, integrity. Ooh. And, you know, and I can roll that into my military life too. I mean, really, that's our core values, right? And authenticity, you know, you have to be authentic in everything you do. Integrity, you got to, you know, have integrity in what you do and what you say and who you interact with and all that. And truthfulness. I mean, those are the three things we put down. And I think, you know, if we can't live that way, if we can't hold that to ourselves as a known or as a truth, well, then we're not doing that for ourselves. If we're to do that for somebody else, we're not doing it for ourselves. So there's a mismatch there. So you have to step into that with everything you do. And
where we're evolving into this 5D reality, we are going to start developing a little bit more telepathy. We're going to be able to see who we really are. And so if you are not authentic and you're not standing in your integrity, mm-hmm. it's going to be obvious and you're just not going to be able to hide any longer. So it's so important to live an authentic life and live with integrity.
I think some of the guests are going to say, I don't want anybody reading my mind. Right. I don't want telepathy. But we're getting there. I mean, we've experienced it a number of times. We're part of a bigger group that meets every Sunday, and we collectively, mindfully enter into a meditative state where we can connect our consciousnesses so we can communicate that way. And it's been very interesting. It's been a very interesting experience. So,
yeah, I can only imagine what that's like. And I mean that sincerely. I can only imagine what that's like because I've really got no idea what that's like. So. Mm-hmm. Okay, next question is, what is your relationship like with fear?
And this is where I was going to introduce Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert.
Sorry, I jumped the gun like an hour and a half ago.
You did. You blew it for me. But no, I love, that's one of my favorite books because she said something in there about, hey, we're human. Fear has to ride along with us. It has to sit in the back seat. You have to take control over it. You're never going to get rid of it, but you have to take control of it and operate in spite of the fear. So she's my favorite. I just love that.
Yep. And I would say I embody that when I do my work, because I couldn't do the work that I do if fear was up front and alongside me. I just couldn't. You asked about it earlier. You know, am I fearful of anything? Am I afraid of anything? Well, I do this. Nope, I can't be. I honestly can't be. So
because it would go places it shouldn't go.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I had someone I know who had been to a three-day ayahuasca ceremony, and she was going to go back for her a second one. Mm-hmm. And this is a year or two later. I saw her recently and she was telling me about it. I said, so how was it? She goes, oh, it was really good. And she said, you know, at one point in time, Mother Ayahuasca got really dark. Like she turned into this demon-y, snarly, dragon-y sort of a thing. And she said, I just looked at her and I went, who paid you $10 to dress up like a dragon? And she the dark thing just disappeared. And it's kind of like a children's cartoon when they're having a bad dream and they say something like that, say something glib to a bad thing, and it kind of turns into a little happy smiley face and like, oh, okay, I tried to scare, but I couldn't, you know.
Yep.
And
that's right.
I would imagine in that space, if you had fear, like if something like that shows up and you had fear, it would overwhelm the whole thing. Whereas if you can just go, piss off, mate.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, you touched on it as far as psychedelic experiences or anything like that, ayahuasca or any of those. And really, you know, if you have any doubt, you have any fear before you find yourself in one of those situations, that's going to be part of your journey.
Yes.
You know, you have to, and you may want to confront those you know, those experiences. But for myself, I'll say that, you know, my intention is never to have any fear and to be completely available for whatever I'm going to experience.
Yeah. They're setting that in, you know, it doesn't matter if you're doing what you're doing or, you know, some sort of a plant medicine journey. Yeah. There's a lot about the intentions, you know, with psychedelics, they talk about setting.
Yes.
And, you know, I know when I did an ayahuasca ceremony, like there's a month of preparation for it. There's journaling and there's intentions and there's diet changes and, yeah, it's not something to be taken lightly.
No, correct. Not at all. Yeah. You're creating the vessel in which you're going to journey. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And, if it's not prepared properly, it's going to be a rough one. Mm-hmm. But many people enjoy that, I guess. I don't know. So
I'm not a fan. Let's get to your last question. What is your thoughts about what it makes to be, what it is to be a leader and to be a follower?
Boy, I bring that forward from my military training, and I've seen both sides of it. You know, good leaders, bad leaders, and a ton of followers. And really, a leader is to turn the followers into leaders. It's to set an environment, and that's what we try to create here. Is set an environment that, you know, we're not here to be, you know, any better than anybody else. We're not here to be the teacher. We're not here to be the, you know, the kind of the know-it-all. We're here to be an equal and give you some guidance so that you can flourish and so that you can someday step in the role that I'm doing and take the reins and move forward. So to me, that's really a leader. And that's when it comes down to even the aspects of, you know, within the tribal aspect of things or the shamanic aspect of things. You know, it's a place of being humble and just being present and eliciting the gifts of others to step forward and holding space for that to be maybe even better than the shaman itself. So,
yeah. Right. When we teach Reiki students, it's about helping them to uncover their unique gift. Mm-hmm. So we're just the facilitator. We hold space. We teach the lesson that we're teaching, but it's not about, again, us being the guru or the go-to person. It's about facilitating their opening, their awakening, their uncovering. And a good leader in a setting, you know, in a work setting, recognizes those gifts in others and draws those out. Those are the best kinds of
leaders. Yeah, creates an environment for growth. That's the best way to say it. A good leader creates an environment for growth. Yeah.
I think so. Great. Wise words. So how can people learn more about you? Where can they find your books?
So the books can be found at Allison's website, drallisonbrown.com. There's a tab that'll say books and you can peruse all of them. They're also available on Amazon, but if you'd like a signed copy, just go to Allison's website, drallisonbrown.com. You can also look to see what we all do together as a couple in our modalities, which is at palmandlotus.com. And in that you'll see a tab that'll say treehouse, and that'll kind of give you an idea of what the treehouse is. And then in that you'll see a calendar link that you can see all of the upcoming events that we have here at the treehouse. And then lastly, you can find me on YouTube at my YouTube channel, which is The Collective Channel by William Brown. And there's a number of different playlists, which include the podcast, my monthly channelings, different special channelings that I've done specific for specific things, specific entities, beings, galactics, whatever you want to call it, as well as other podcasts that we've partaken in. So
there are videos of the actual channelings?
There are some videos of the actual channelings, yes. My monthlies are not the video aspect of it. It's just the audio, but there are some actual 15-minute clips of different animal channelings. I don't know if there's any.
I think it's mostly pets. But they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just interested in looking at what
the process
you were doing when it's.
If you watch a pet channeling, it's going to be a very similar experience for the monthly channeling as well as a personal a higher self channeling and experience like that. Yeah.
There's no videos of you turning into a Zeta or anything like that, is there?
Darn it.
I don't think so. Now, well, it's interesting, though, because we've had people in the audience, in the live audience, that have said that they've actually seen kind of the overlay.
Some of the more sensitives can see an overlay. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Whether it's the Zeta or Archangel Michael or some other, you know, upper dimensional being, they see kind of the shift.
The energetic.
The inner shift. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Wow. So I had someone on the podcast recently, and she was talking about her shamanic mentor. Mm. And I thought, that guy's name sounds familiar. I kind of got searching around, and I realized I had a book that was written by this guy that I was in Costa Rica earlier this year, and a friend down there said, you need to read this book. Mm. And it was by the same guy. So I started reading them. I dug it out last night, and I just started reading it. So maybe I recorded that podcast yesterday. They all roll into one after a while. But anyway, so I'm reading it, and this guy was saying when he went to Peru and he had this shaman as a mentor, and now we're talking about helping people pass over, mm-hmm. helping people, souls leave their body. And this person was passing away, and this shaman said to his, you know, the mentor guy said to him, look, can you see it? And he's talking about how he could actually see like a wisp of something like that, mm-hmm. the soul leaving the body. And it was only because of his prior training up to that point in time that he could do that. And that kind of sounds like what you're talking about, people being able to see that.
Yeah. It's the energy shift that takes place. I mean, there are many people that are extremely sensitive that have learned over time that come repeatedly to our monthly channeling. They elect not to sit directly in front of me. They'll move to the side because it hits them pretty hard, because there's a lot of times that the energy shifts so much that they lose focus of what's actually taking place at that time.
Right. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Wowzers. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me. This has been one of those memorable conversations that you don't get to have every day.
Absolutely, our pleasure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you guys are doing out there in the world, and I'm excited to have a look at some of these videos, and I'm pretty sure everybody at home might too. So once again, thanks for joining us, and you guys at home, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Journey On Podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a part of the Journey On Podcast with Warwick Schiller. Warwick has over 850 full-length training videos on his online video library at videos.warwickschiller.com. Be sure to follow Warwick on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram to see his latest training advice and insights.